You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 12th of July 2014 on Monocle 24. Monocle's very own team of hard-nosed magazine connoisseurs casts a critical eye over the latest newsstand offerings and provides the inside view on our own summer newspaper. This week we're staying in-house to get the Monocle editor's viewpoint right here on The Stack. Now, regular Stack listeners will be well used to our enthusiasm for talking to magazine experts the world over on the programme. Sometimes, though, we like to hear from our own experts here at Midori House. So, this week we welcome Monocle's editor, Andrew Tuck, and senior editorial assistant, Thomas Reynolds, into the studio for a good old-fashioned chinwag about what's good and not so good on global newsstands right now. We will also be heading west to New York City, where we'll meet the duo behind a new publication making waves with its unbound, large format, highly attractive aesthetics.
We wanted to produce something that was an object that you held on to. I think it really came out of having a love for magazines.
All that and much more besides coming up today on this 98th edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show with me, Tom Edwards. So it is rather a Monocle special of The Stack. Here with me in Studio One are Tom Reynolds and Andrew Tuck. Andrew, just to begin with you, obviously, where are we at in the sort of Monocle metabolism just at the moment? Mediterraneo, Monocle's summer magazine. It's is it on nearly ready to be on newsstands?
It's nearly ready to be on newsstands. And oddly, we call it a newspaper. We don't call it a magazine. So this is our kind of diversion twice a year. So when we first started Monocle, we came out, well, we still do come out 10 times a year with a magazine. And part of that was, you know, an economic reason. We felt that there wasn't really kind of the advertising revenue that we'd needed in those early days to do an issue in, for example, January or an issue in August as well. So we bunched together the summer and the winter issues, made big special issues of them, double issues that would, you know, take people over the holiday seasons. But actually, after a kind of a year or so, we thought, actually, we'd like to be on holiday with our readers. So we introduced these two large format newspapers. They just come out once. It's a big glossy, well, it's not a big glossy, it's a big matte read. But the other thing that interested us was, you know, it came at a time when there was a lot of discussion about the death of newspapers. And you start with the very basic thing, newsprint, and that's what we've started with. And how do you use that? And how do you use it in a more glorious way? And we just felt that there was a, you know, in our world, there was a way of reinventing newsprint a little bit.
And it's interesting because a lot of people, when they're talking about newspapers, one of the problems is they're an ephemeral thing, you know, here today, irrelevant the next day. But the trick, I guess, of Mediterraneo and Alpino again in the winter months is to make something that has a enduring quality. Were you very conscious, because you used to work in daily and weekly newspapers, the kind of demands are a bit different. Do you find it quite easy to make something that has that same kind of enduring quality, even though it's a newspaper?
So what's nice about using newsprint rather than just doing another little magazine for the summer is that there is a sense that you want it to be bashed around a little bit more. And when I go to hotels in the summer and I see somebody reading it and it's by their deck chair or it's by the pool and it's getting a bit wet and they've rested their bottle of wine on it, I think good on them. That's what it's there to be used. There's something about Monocle, which is, you know, because it's a nice object that people often get annoyed if their friends kind of buckle the spine or if they kind of like pull a page out. But with Monocle Mediterraneo, or Med as we call it, I think that people feel it's, you know, it can be abused a little bit more. It can be folded up and stuck in their tote bag when they go to the beach. So the format, first of all, there's something very nice and friendly about it. And then the other thing for us is just, you know, we're very used to working in this magazine shape that we have, which is quite trim and neat. And then just the expansiveness of the page when we do Med and when we do Alpino. And especially when you have an advertiser, for example, who takes a double page spread, you look at that and it's like, wow, this is really interesting. Because again, what we're trying to do in the world of print is to remind people that there is still a strong market. And actually, advertisers particularly know that they want their ads to look good. And when they open Med, then they realize why it's still important to invest in print.
Now, it's interesting you say that, Andrew, about the sort of the sheer scale and what it can afford you, because I've got here a new title, paper light, which is newspaper. I mean, it looks like a sort of small format tabloid newspaper. But the sort of founding principle here is that great photography needs that kind of scale that you've been describing, Andrew. Tom, we were looking at this one before, paper light, and you had a view on it because it's tricky, isn't it? Pulling off that trick between making great photography look good. You've got the scale on your side with this, but on, you know, newspaper, it's a hard act maybe to have the images looking maybe as striking as they might.
Yeah, of course. I mean, with newsprint, there's always a problem with the images kind of looking a bit flat, I guess. But yeah, you're completely right. They've got the size is brilliant, and you can really see the images. They look great. But yeah, I think with newsprint on for images, it's so much nicer on a gloss on a glossy stock. They sort of pop out a bit more and stand out. And to have a publication solely about imagery, and it's on newsprint, it's going to be a bit tough.
Bit of a challenge. Yeah. But it's a novel thought. What, I mean, Andrew, I think that's the first glance you've had at that. What do you make of that? Do you think that it can sort of pull the trick off? Because one of the nice things about newspaper, it's sort of what you're alluding to there, you know, you get that sort of worn quality, get a little frayed maybe around the edges. I don't know, it can be quite a tricky act to pull off. How do you think, at first glance?
There's a few things. So they've done that tricksy thing where that you run the images sideways and all sorts of things. The reality is, the way that people go through a newspaper is by turning the page. But there has to be a stopping point also on paper. You know, that's the funny thing when people use the newspaper format. So with Med, of course, there are things to read on each page. There are images. There is some wit and humour. And somehow when you just run full page images, I think, on newsprint, I'm not quite sure whether it always works. There's, you know, it's great. You turn over every page, but do you stop? And I find no reason to kind of pause on any of these pages. And so if you're asking people to pay any money, or if you're asking people to invest in this, you're through it. It is properly paper light. You're through it in like 20 seconds.
That's an inadvertently accurate description, perhaps. But it's a nice project. I like the idea of trying to challenge the current sort of supremacy of small screen, you know, looking at images on a phone, on a tablet. It's never going to look as good. And we've got a few other examples.
I was just going to say with that, you know, I always think back here, we're playing with newsprint and they are, but I always think back to Interview magazine, the Warhol magazine. Now, when I was in my 20s, that was coming out still on, you know, a large format and just had the Q&A format for all the interviews and things. But it was sensational. It was like a really kind of wonderful thing. And, you know, when it was on newsprint, it seemed like really special. So it's really fun, all of us coming afterwards. You've got quite a high benchmark for, you know, to follow. There are people who reinvented newsprint much earlier on than us.
We are here on The Stack looking at magazines and newspapers from a Monocle point of view with our editor Andrew Tuck and senior editorial assistant and magazine aficionado Thomas Reynolds. We'll take a short break though now. When we come back, we're heading to New York City to hear from two more magazine stalwarts behind the beautiful new annual magazine Let's Panic.
What designs will you be wearing next season? How will architecture change the face of your city? And which redesign will affect the paper you pick up?
It's very strange. It's like two triangles and two squares more. But I think that's a stimulus for the architect.
The kerning can take 5 times as long as actually designing the letter forms, which seems fairly brutal.
Is it going to perform? Is it going to stay the same? Is it going to be the same? That's normal anxiety.
Good design improves our lives. If you want to find out how, join me, Monocle's design editor Tom Morris, every Tuesday on Monocle 24.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards. Now it's time to head to New York City. Years in the making, the annual magazine Let's Panic published its first issue last autumn. Printed in Verona, the unbound large format publication fills its pages with full-scale images, untarnished by text and conversations from the likes of Japanese surrealist Toshio Sekai, Yoko Ono and Sean Lennon. The magazine is the vision of founder and editor Aaron Ward and senior editor Jade Barrow, who gave nearly free rein to photographers, artists and contributors, all with the hope of creating something truly collectible. Monocle's Megan Billings sat down with the duo to get the details on the launch of that famous first issue.
I see it as a unique publication. It's got a high price point. We've gone to a great extent to keep the quality really high, the paper stock and the inks and the printing and the editing and all of the process is we go through a long, slow approach to what I imagine generally happens in the publishing world. We have we take our time.
In terms of the price point, it's $60 for an issue, but the quality of the paper is wonderful. It's very large. The photographs fill entire pages. You can really see the quality in the magazine when you're looking at it. I mean, first of all, does that scare you at all when you're putting a magazine on a shelf and it's $60? And also, you know, what goes into producing something that's worth paying $60?
It really just came around naturally. We wanted to produce something that was an object that you held on to. I think it really came out of having a love for magazines. Over the last 25, 30 years and collecting them obsessively, and then really kind of the last decade had really not spent much time at the newsstand or been inspired. And I realized there was a stack in the corner of my bookshelf that I'd always held onto, and there was magazines like Egoist and Manipulator and Helmut Newton's Illustrated, certain copies of Interview, just these wonderful issues that were just so special, and I held on to them. They were never thrown out. And when Greg Cadell, my partner who I founded Let's Panic with, approached me saying he wanted to start a magazine, and he thought I was the only person he would be willing to do it with just because of my obsessive nature of collecting photography and researching it and love of magazines.
Also just the quality of books as well, not just magazines. Let's Panic to me is a merger of the two. It's almost like a book. It's not quite a magazine. And it's really about keeping the integrity of the art, the photography. There's no typeface on any of the images. You could almost take out a page and frame it. And I think that's also what attracts a lot of the contributors, that they can see that their work is going to be printed with quality and integrity.
So we wanted to make this a place really where someone could come to us with an idea that maybe wouldn't fit generally in a magazine, that has to really honor their advertisers and have credit placement, and it could be a bit more abstract or nonsensical. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really nice way to collaborate with people, and it's taken on a nature of its own now, and it really did in the first issue too. A lot of times when I was trying to explain what Let's Panic was, I would get a lot of blank stares of people just really not understanding it, and it takes time to really to make it happen.
Right, because there is no theme really, just organically happened, because it was really about letting contributors and artists be inspired, and what we felt was right for what we were trying to show was right, and it wasn't about, oh, this is the beauty issue or this is the whatever issue. It just came together very naturally, and somehow there's a common thread, and I think that common thread is the quality of the work and the honesty of the work and the integrity, and it somehow does work.
I do get the sense that there's a lot of creative freedom in what people can and can't do in this magazine, but where does the editing kind of come in there, and what kind of role do you steer it?
I guess we're similar to a band that started where no one knows how to play any instruments. So I think it really has taken on a nature of its own. I have worked as a photographer. I have a history of, like I said, obsessively collecting photography books. I know what I like and what I don't.
The way I like to edit is I kind of try to imagine the image 20 years from now. Is it going to hold? I have noticed along the way working in fashion and photography that there's something really strong about a timeless quality, and just looking at timeless images over and over and over again, I try to approach new images that way. You know, I don't know if I'm right, we'll see in 20 years, but that's how I try to edit.
We are definitely really strong about what goes in, what doesn't. There's a lot of play, and it, I guess it's almost like a painting at the end of the day when we put it on the wall, that and what can flow with what and how we're editing.
We do have the luxury of time, so images can sit in front of us for 3, 4, 5 months, and if they still hold true, we know it's right, which is a luxury a lot of magazines sometimes don't have.
That was Monocle's Megan Billings talking to the duo behind Let's Panic. Welcome back to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Alongside me here in Studio One at Midori House today, I've got Monocle's editor, Andrew Tuck, and one of our many magazine aficionados, Thomas Reynolds. Now, Andrew, we got a horde of people. Our listeners, can we hear the sheer volume, impressive stack of magazines that we've got, all different kinds of offerings and formats. And you've got a couple of things there. One of them is a new interiors magazine. And one of the things actually we've touched upon in The Stack the last couple of weeks has been a certain kind of, I don't want to call it, homogeneity of appearance with, you know, your covers have a cover image, a sort of a white banner, you know, a black title, maybe a little subhead. And there's almost a slightly kind of, I don't want to call it a generic look. Do you find that a little alarming that a few of these journals seem to have kind of identified a format that works fairly well and they're a bit keen to stick to it? Or do you find that kind of works and it does invite you in as it should?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. The cover is perhaps a little bit kind of derivative. But what's interesting for me, so this is a magazine called Open House. It's called The Life We Share. And it comes out of Barcelona, where, of course, Apartmento comes out of as well. And when you look down the masthead, it's a mix of kind of locals and all sorts of people. There's Andrew Trotter is the guy who's the editor and creative director of this. And it's about people opening up their houses for you to kind of have a look at anyway. So I kind of like the idea of it. There are some nice things in here that I would quite happily have a look at. But you buy interiors magazines for two things. One, because you're actually about to do something in your house and you want to know what colour to put on your walls. Or you want some escapism and you go to some of the bigger AD titles. Or there's this whole genre now of kind of how people live kind of magazines, which Apartmento was the kind of the forerunner of all of them, I guess. And this is, even though this is kind of, you know, obviously a little bit different, it still sits in that kind of same world. So yeah, you see some nice things, but you never come away with it saying, oh, I want to do that. It's not that kind of, it's an exploring of the home in a very different way.
Now, Tom, you've got a healthy stack of magazines before you there. I know, obviously, you used to work at the Green Soccer Journal, which is a magazine, a sort of a friend of ours. We've had the editors sort of on the stack before, and a lot of our guests actually reference and name check it. And so, just briefly, I guess it's still kind of World Cup season. We're just a day away from the World Cup final itself. What's the state of play, if you'll forgive the terrible pun, of the sort of football magazine market? I know you've got one there, Colours, which we've touched upon before. Do you find that, especially with things like Green and like Colours, it's changed people's expectations of what you can do with a football title? Do you feel that way?
Yeah, definitely. I think the way that football news and the sport was always consumed is either through the back page on the news on a daily basis or in the sort of, you know, Shoot and Match and Total Football and magazines like that of the day, which really it took it in quite a traditional way. And now with these sort of independent publications cropping up talking about football, it's showing it in a different light and it's having a more of an intelligent and sophisticated look at it. And it completely opens up the sport and it shows it in this really interesting way, which I think it makes it, it's broader and it's more accessible. I mean, I know for a fact a lot of the people who would buy The Green were from a design background, and a few of them were unfamiliar with a lot of the footballing concepts, terms and players, but they just were fascinated by the way it was laid out and to see these photographers shooting these footballers in a certain way. And yeah, I think it's very good for the sport.
It is. I like that. We like to strike an upbeat message at least some of the time. Andrew, you got us a couple of other things there. We were talking about that a little earlier, about the sort of collision between books and magazines and collectibles and this sort of thing. And I know there's a project that Alan de Botton's been involved in, which we actually touched upon before, I think, on Monocle 24. And it is this collision between, you know, long-form writing, the sort of more bookish style, and the magazine. Is it almost like a new subgenre? Are you kind of fairly sanguine about that? Or do you think that things need to kind of be a book or be a magazine? Or where there are these blurred lines, is that kind of interesting territory creatively to be working in, do you think?
Well, hats off to Alan de Botton for doing this. It is a really interesting project. It is taking some of the ideas from, you know, how you do a magazine and adding it to books. And I guess seeing whether we can find a new market for books amongst people who have stopped buying them, I guess, on paper. Mm. The first one was by Jeff Dyer, which was about Another Great Day at Sea, which was about life aboard the USS George H.W. Bush. And, you know, a sexy subject in a way, and, you know, you're on board with sailors. The second one, well, it's about the IMF.
It doesn't get sexier than that, Andrew.
No, but yeah, it's called Money and Tough Love, and it's by Liaquat Ahmed, who is a well-known author and writer, you know, a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, actually, on financial affairs. When Jeff Dyer came in, I said to him, oh, I said, it's, you know, it's great to see this hybrid of, you know, book and magazine. And he was a bit upset. He was like, oh, it's a book. I didn't want it to be like a magazine. Because the thing is, they're full of photography, and that is a way of bringing these topics to life. What's good is actually when someone designs a book, and this is what you don't get often on with things online, someone's chosen a nice font. You know, the leading is perfect. It's kind of, it's at the right point size. There's something very attractive about this. You know, you kind of want to read it. Whereas some of the other magazines we've seen today, it does strike me that people don't even realise, you know, that, you know, how your eye travels across a page. The column widths are just too wide. You know, it makes it uncomfortable and hard work for you as a reader. Whereas this is actually, without being dumbed down, is designed to be read. It's, that's a really simple thing, and that's the skill of the, you know, the magazine designer.
Tom, back, ducking into your pile again, you've got one of your titles that you're a regular reader of. Tell us about this one, because it's quite a really arresting, very striking appearance, would like grab you by the short and curlies on the newsstand. Remind us what it is and tell us why it kind of appeals to you, I guess.
So this is a publication called O32C. It's come out of Berlin, and it's actually given to me by a friend, and I've been following it for it's biannual, I've been following it for a few years now, and it's brilliant. The editor's Jörg Koch. Excuse my
that's pretty good
brutalization of his name, but he's the editor-in-chief and the creator, and then the art director is Mike Mira, who works on a number of editorial publications, and they create all of the editorial and then they just pass it off to him, and he does the whole art direction, works with the layout, and it's quite an awkward publication. It's interesting you're saying about how to read, because like you said, the column widths are really narrow, the type's quite ugly, and Mike Mirror's known for his sort of beautiful in the ugly sort of design. I mean, I'll be honest, it's a bit of a nightmare to read every month, because it can...
And that strikes me as interesting. I mean, at what point then do you say, well, but this is really about something beyond functionality? You know, it's a collector's piece, it's something to cast an eye over, it's not something to read per se. And
exactly.
I was doing those quotation marks in the air then, just in case
no one can see,
get that, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, that the articles in there are really interesting, and it is a struggle to read, but yeah, it's a piece of art in a way. It's lovely, beautifully bound, and they get some amazing photographers to shoot for them, and it's a piece to carry around with you, it's a piece to keep. And
a piece to be seen with, perhaps.
Exactly.
I know that's what you're all about. And Andrew, you alluded to the title that you've got there a bit earlier, and it's interesting, talking about kind of clarity of purpose, I guess clarity of editorial message. Is that a hit or a miss? Because this is a magazine, you tell us the title, and it's got a slightly complex strapline.
It's called Majestic Disorder, and the strapline is The Cultural Map of Aesthetics and Knowledge, which confounds you from the kind of get-go. And, you know, I was just reading the editor's letter before we came on air, and I literally haven't got a clue what it's about.
I thought you were going to come out with it. It was very clear.
First of all, it's handsome. They've chosen a nice paper. There's, you know, some okay photography in here. But this is what it apparently, it says, taking a step back, we began examining what the dialogue looks like between the nomadic travel culture of today's societies and the individuals around the globe who make up this budding community of new ideas. They wanted to discover, it seems, about the digital era melding in with the laid-back bohemian approach. Oh my God, I'm lost. So if you know, if they can't explain very clearly what they're about, then I think it's always going to be a slightly confounding read. So you don't know what it's about. You know, I kind of understand you. It's kind of like two fingers up to the reader a little bit, because there's no stand first on any of these stories. So it never explains what any of the stories are about. You know, there's a piece here. It says, Ellie Landsman, artist, painter, jewellery designer. Now, why do I want to read? There's no, you know, in America, you used to call the stand first a sell. And for a very simple reason, you need to sell the story to people. You need to encourage people to go in. There's no pull quote on this thing. You know, there's no, the measure of the is so wide that your eye can hardly travel across it. It's just a tough read. And then you think, well, do you care about journalism? Do you care about people reading what you've got to say? Or is this just a product that people are meant to flick through and put down again? And if I was a journalist, I'd be disheartened to think that, you know, yeah, it may look like a kind of clever product, but hey, there's no way that anyone's going to read anything I've done.
So, I mean, that's an interesting point, Tom. You were alluding to that with so a couple of the titles that you have there. The consideration for the reader, and they're still called the reader. They need to read the title. Do you ever worry that there's almost a game of trying to, you know, certain designers trying to maybe, you know, outdo one another, creative directors who are more interested in pushing the envelope than delivering something that's saleable, that's readable?
I think you have to have a reader and you have to have an audience. And the magazine Majestic Disorder that Andrew's just looking for, I'm struggling to think who are they aiming at? Who is their audience? And is it photographers? Is it design students? You know, who's picking this up to read?
Is it for the nomadic traveller, didn't you know? No, I don't mean everyone. I'm sure they've put a huge amount of hard work into it, but it just needs to kind of address the reader a little bit more, because otherwise, in the end, you know, the print becomes, you know, some kind of like weird specialist thing that you only think you're going to sell 1,000 copies of. You know, print should be robust. Print should be grabbing people and making them read it. Of course, there is a place for that kind of, you know, artistic world where, you know, Monocle is about shooting, for example, fashion in a way that is understandable and in the end introduces you to somebody who's made a jacket that you might like to buy. There is a world of fashion reporting or fashion styling, for example, where it's not about that. It's about a certain kind of, you know, liberty taken by the stylist, an adventure, and, you know, it's not really, to be honest, about the clothes. And there's, of course, a world for that. That's art. But when it comes to the words, surely you should be able to read them.
I think that's a handsome point on which to draw our discussion to a close. That's Tom Reynolds and Andrew Tuck casting a critical eye over some of the new releases and some old favourites here on the Stack. Thank you very much to you both. That brings us to the end of this 98th edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. A special thanks to our guests, Monocle's Andrew Tuck and Thomas Reynolds, to our producer, David Pleasant, and of course, our studio manager, Claire Urban. Any comments or queries, drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And don't forget, next Saturday, we're back at the very same time. You can listen again at monocle.com via iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, until next week's episode, from me, Tom Edwards, it's goodbye. Thanks for listening.